UFOs, cryptids, and the unexplained. The legendary Skinwalker Ranch is back with an exciting Kickstarter campaign from Boom Studios to cover a landmark moment for the paranormal investigative community. Join Dr. Colm A. Keller and journalist George Knapp as they delve into the mysterious phenomena that defy explanation from their book, Hunt for the Skinwalker. Get the exclusive declassified hardcover edition of the groundbreaking book and captivating artwork by David Seedman. Discover the real-world events of the Skinwalker saga with a graphic novel from X-Men Unlimited writer Zach Thompson, who reconstructs the incredible true story originally documented by Dr. Keller and Knapp's investigation of the ranch, with many of these mysterious incidents visualized for the first time. You may also uncover the truth with a rare collection of classified documents from the author's personal files. These never-before-seen files will be limited to 375 copies and will never be printed again. This Kickstarter campaign will be the only place to get them. Don't miss out. Reserve your copy before June 8th at boomstud.io/skinwalker. That is boomstud.io/skinwalker and experience the paranormal like never before.
Shitballs.
Yeah, let's jump in on that note.
Ta-ta-la-ta-ta-ta.
You guys don't get to know. It's fine.
I don't. That was real piercing in my ears. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Well, shit, y'all. Welcome to Ghosts and Hoes.
Ghosts and Hoes.
Ghosts and Hoes. The holiday edition.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the day we're recording it, not when it comes out.
Yeah, no. And besides, it's a Monday holiday, and Monday holidays, I never even realize are holidays because that's always my day off anyway.
Yeah.
So, anyway, welcome to Ghosts and Hoes.
Hello.
Paranormal podcast, where we talk about all things spoopy, cryptids.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm throwing up.
See, when you do this, it slows her down and it feels like an eternity.
Motherfucking aliens?
Yeah.
Motherfucking witchcraft?
Sometimes.
Uh-huh. Murder most motherfucking foul. Oh. Yeah, see, we got it. Space ocean?
Goddamn.
Space ocean? A haunted bunk bed or two? Demons? Mm. We got them?
Sure did.
Yeah. Yeah. All the shit. So, do we have any backhoes?
Well, you know that we do.
You know that we do.
First.
And foremost.
And most importantly.
Yes.
Rest in peace, Tina Turner.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
You are simply the best.
Yeah.
And I don't regret that statement at all, because it was
big
fucking
wheels,
true.
Keep on turning. Proud Mary.
Keep on burning.
Yeah.
It was Tina Turner was one of my mom's favorite artists of all time, which rightfully fucking so.
Is mom okay?
Yeah, she sent me a text and she's like, tell me it's not true. And I'm like, well, I can't lie to my mom, so I can't tell you that.
I cannot say that to you, ma'am.
That would be a lie. And she's like, what did she say? She's like, I'm never going to roll down the river again. I'm like, well, we have to roll down the river in her honor. And she's like, oh, that's a good point. I'm like, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, so there's that.
Keep on burning.
Yeah. Well.
Just fucking so great.
Yes.
So, and if you don't know anything about Tina Turner and her life, please go. I think there's a documentary some damn where.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch it. Even watch What's Love Got to Do with It, the amazing movie with Angela Bassett.
Great movie.
Watch that. You'll get an idea of what happened in her life. The internet is there. Go look, because Jesus,
the
Lord,
whole ass.
She was
interwebs.
A fucking force.
Yes, so, she was.
There is that.
So. I didn't know Harry Belafonte died.
I said it weeks ago.
Did you?
I did.
And I brought
guess it's
and
also because I forgot who Harry Belafonte was at the time.
I thought he had already died.
And then I brought it up again the next week.
And I was like, yes, no, we said it last week.
So,
because remember, I thought he had already died because
well,
I am the worst.
He lives on through this podcast.
I was going to say, time's a charm. Yes, Harry Belafonte
jump
died.
In the line, sir. Rock your body in time.
You guys need to jump in the line and realize we've had this conversation. Thrice now.
Woo!
We've had it thrice.
Okay. Well,
but I'm not mad at it because it's funny to me every time.
It is funny.
But yes, I enjoy it.
Apparently, we're stuck on Harry Belafonte
for
some reason.
Until very recently,
I didn't link his name to the music.
Gotcha.
I recently figured out who he was. So when they're like, Harry Belafonte died, I'm like, okay, not like he didn't write music for one of the most inspirational movies for me of all time.
And whose dad is he? He's one of his...
Trixie Belafonte.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Somebody. Anyway, do go on.
Medina Belafonte.
I'm going to hit the googs. You get on.
What is happening?
I'm just pulling out.
I can tell.
Get on them backhoes.
Less frequently used lady names.
I'll do the googs. The googs will tell me.
Oh, my mom also wanted you both to know.
Yes.
That she would take me to any restaurant I wanted to go to. Whenever, for any reason at all.
Oh, we know
birthdays
that.
And holidays. She just needed to confirm it. That you knew it wasn't her.
I appreciate that.
And I was like, no, I said.
Mama Z.
And she's like, I know, I just need you to tell them on air that anywhere, it's not me. I won't make you go to a Denny's adjacent restaurant for your birthday. Or any reason at all. Because why would we do that?
Right.
I'm like, I know.
That's who I was thinking of. What? Sherry Belafonte.
Oh, okay.
So she's an actress, and she has been in, okay, yeah, there we go. A lot of things.
Yes.
Muchas.
Yeah, I knew aha! One of his kids did something.
Mm.
Yeah. So, anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. Be sure to stick around after the episode this week, and you'll get a sneak peek of this month's La Patrone. Which features guest Ash Trobe talking about Boom Studios' Kickstarter and new release, Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be real cool. So yep. There's that. That's all I got.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Well, shit, I don't have one either. Do I? Oh. My.
Do I? No. Yes?
Yes. It's not, I mean, a backhoe, but my baby sister.
Yeah.
My sweet sister that I love.
Yeah.
She sent me a photo the other day and said that we all inspired her, and it is a photo of a bag of the hot mustard Doritos.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. Buy, if you see them, buy two bags.
Do that.
What do you think?
Love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I went to the store and I was like, ooh, I didn't find them in the like chip aisle. Uh-huh. They were at a little like thing near the register. There's like a basket of random Doritos, and I'm like, ooh, I better get two, because once they do this, I feel like they're on their way out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I now have 2.5 bags at home.
And if anyone out there in listening land, if you ever see Lay's chicken and waffles, send them to me.
They really stopped making those this time. They're not they don't exist anymore.
They might find them somewhere.
I don't know if I'd want to eat them at that point.
Well, you know,
they'd be old as balls.
Yeah, but it's potatoes and salt.
They might be stale, though.
Who knows? But if you see them, let us know.
Just in case.
We don't got them.
Yeah, we don't
we
got
don't.
Them.
We
don't got them.
Yeah, it's like there's a guy that I follow on the interweb. His handle is Dinosaur Dracula, which is hilarious. And he, if you've ever seen videos of someone opening like an old can of like Spider-Man SpaghettiOs, that's him.
Mm.
Like his house is like all vintage pop culture stuff. It's really cool. And he's got a podcast about it. The purple stuff, I think. I've never listened to it, but I know that for some reason.
Mm, brains
but,
are weird.
Especially mine.
Mm, same.
But yeah, he's got all these like old food items that sometimes he'll open.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way you could try them because...
Oh, they're that bad?
Oh, yeah. Let me find... There's a picture of like... that you can barely make out the
ooh.
Shape of
oh, see,
like,
that can't, yeah, no,
one of the...
That's not good.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm scared. But it's funny to watch.
But when... Chicken and waffles Lay's were a thing. Like, she wiped out store shelves for
me. I did. Because we knew that it was one of those, like, the Lay's flavor contests.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they had him. And then once the other flavor won, they're like, oh, time to do away with these. And so I'm like, well.
And then Dave wiped out several store shelves in Minnesota and shipped me this huge box full.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because. I mean, sometimes when you find a favorite.
Yeah. And then they re-released them. Same thing. God, they're good.
Here you
tastes
go.
Like chicken and waffles, just straight up.
They were good. 25-year-old can of Spider-Man pasta.
No. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, no.
Oh, thank you.
No.
That scares me.
No, canned food clearly does expire.
It looks like a meteor.
Wow.
It looks like a meteor. And then somebody... made the Spider-Man's pointing at each other meme with the Spider-Man. I was like, that's funny. I appreciate you.
It's a good gag.
Oh, shit.
It is. But yeah, that's all. And more than what I had.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Shitty tits.
Well, yeah. Well, you go first, correct? Because I did the last time.
Your face didn't like that at all.
It's a weird visual.
No thanks.
For some people.
I mean, if that's what you're into, good on you, I guess.
I'm not. I just want to clarify.
See, and I'm
not
just
for
seeing,
me.
I'm just envisioning the poop emoji, like, on boobs.
I would.
Oh, as like pasties?
That's absolutely.
Because that's fun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean.
That's fun.
I'm sure
but
there's
like,
a burlesque
as the boob,
artist.
It's a
poop emoji, pasties are funny.
I am certain there's got to be a burlesque artist out there somewhere that's done an act with that.
Oh, has
sure.
to be.
I imagine someone who listens to this podcast has poop emoji pasties.
And if you don't, you should make them, I guess.
Or if you do, let us know.
Yeah, we'd love to see them. They don't have to be on you. I'm just curious
just
to see
know.
What they look like.
But yeah, no, that's not where my brain went at all.
That's you went, like, literal.
Literal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I mean, we can go that route.
Cacatatas.
Yeah.
Cacatatas.
That's where my brain went.
Cacatatas.
Cacatatas?
Yeah.
If that's your thing, good for you.
Speaking of caca.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Somebody around here does not pick up their dog shit.
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah.
On the main road over there?
They sure don't.
Whew. Yeah, so there's a few landmines out there. Mm-hmm. Dodged them this time. I don't have a poopy shoe.
Yeah, if you live on Southeast Milwaukee in Portland, Oregon, and you don't pick up after your dog.
Fuck you.
Go fuck yourself.
Fuck you.
Eat shit and live.
Eat shit
and live,
Bill. Eat that shit and live.
Specifically that one.
That one. Just gobble it up so that I don't step in it. Of course, what was that, a year or two ago?
About a year ago.
Yeah, I traumatized.
Why, that you stepped in dog poop?
Yeah.
Oh.
On my way here, remember? I was one shoe McGee. Mm. I had poop shoe.
Yep.
When John and I went to Spain, he stepped in some and was like, it's fine. We just got to keep going. And 2 days later, I stepped in some.
It's fine.
Like, fucking God damn it.
Yeah.
Goddamn Spaniards. They don't pick up after their dogs. They just let them shit.
Yeah. I don't think Europe's real big on poop pickups. Right?
Spain specifically,
yeah. They just...
Well, Barcelona specifically.
There is the whole Catalonian shit log.
Catalonian shit logs.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Catalonian shit log Christmas.
Wow, rabbit hole.
Well, I will never forget it.
Nor should you.
Live.
I made it so that you can't.
True. It's just a thing. Nobody's ever explained it to me still. And I would like to know the origins
of shit logs.
For mostly why? Do you know? Are you from Spain? Please explain.
Shitlocks.
Spain, explain it to me, please.
Yes, please. Mm-hmm. I would love to understand the actual origins of, like, why?
I would love to be Spain, explained to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Am I the only one who likes this new word?
Yeah. Okay. I don't hate it. I think I just am indifferent to it. It's not the best you've come up with. But
it's
also
not.
It's not the worst. It's by far not the worst.
What is the worst?
We don't
have time. Keep going.
I don't know.
We don't have time.
We don't, and I don't know.
Work.
And I don't know. I'll get back to you, maybe.
Okay.
If I remember or care enough, I'll let you know.
You guys can also tell me, what's the worst thing I've ever said?
Yeah, like, what's the worst phrase he's ever uttered on this show? Where you can feel my face through whatever listening device you're using. Like... Because he can see it, but I feel like there had to have been at least three where you could feel it yourself, as if you were in this room making me make that face at you. But yeah, no, I don't know. Let us know, because I'll probably forget.
Mm-hmm.
But that said,
that'll make me laugh real hard if we get a list of those.
Please, somebody do
isms.
It. But I have a story to tell unto you on this day.
Fuck yeah.
So let me tell you that now.
I'm ready.
Fuck perfect. Yeah.
My body is ready.
Same.
Good. I'm glad. But it's been a minute since I've covered a haunted house.
Ooh.
So I figured, what better day than today?
It's a great day to do that.
It is a great day for a haunted house exorcism.
Yes. Yeah.
There's no exorcisms involved, so I just, you know.
You have to shoehorn it in there.
I did. But this isn't just any haunted house. This home was reportedly so haunted that the Catholic Church itself stepped in to investigate the claims.
Ooh.
Now, grab your blankies and turn on every light in your house.
Oh, boy.
Because today, I'm going to tell you about the Union Screaming House.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Do you know all right. this one?
I don't.
Okay. I didn't either. And I was like, ooh, interesting. So it's a new one for everybody. Unless you live in Missouri, you might know about it then. So spring of 2001 wasn't starting out so great for Stephen LaChance. His wife left him and their three kids.
Oof.
Just bounced. And the lease on their cramped apartment was just about up. The newly single dad started scouring any and all rental ads and made several phone calls in the hopes of finding a new place for his family ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after his search started, he got a call back from a landlady in Union, Missouri, which is about 50 miles south of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
She was hosting an open house that weekend and invited him to come and check it out. So when the day arrived, Stephen and his daughter, who I believe is the oldest, in everything he's changed his kids' names and
right.
all that stuff. So yeah. I was like, well, I'll just go with that and not name them at all. So he and his oldest daughter, they went to the open house, and it was a quaint, white, craftsman-style home on North Christina Street. And according to him, they were greeted by the smell of cookies baking as soon as they walked through the front door, which, you know, great real estate trick.
Yeah, it is.
So when they walked in, Stephen and his daughter made immediate note of the wallpaper border in the living room because it was just straight up covered in cherubs.
Oh.
Yeah, like, you know, and it wasn't like full wallpaper. It's just a border.
Yeah, just the border.
At the top.
Yep.
Just cherubs. Just watching your every move.
Wow.
In the living room.
That's yeah. weird.
So they're like, huh, well, that's a thing that happened in this house. So, okay. That's a choice.
It is a choice.
The house itself was older. Allegedly, it was built in 1932, mm-hmm. but it seemed in pretty good shape, and it was almost palatial compared to the apartment they'd been living in for the last couple of years. The house had three bedrooms, a basement with a fruit cellar, and mm-hmm. a cement butcher shower, aka where you'd rinse off after butchering an animal back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing.
I fucking didn't either.
And that's what those are. Like, the weird basement showers apparently is called a butcher shower.
Huh!
Yeah. I was like, that makes me only slightly uncomfortable. but, so there was that. It had a mud room, you know, like mm-hmm. a little
yeah.
space to take off your shoes so you don't get the house gross.
Yeah.
Huge kitchen, love yard, it. White picket fence, you know, the dream.
Yeah.
According to Stephen, and this is a quote, it was more house than we ever imagined for the price and immediately made up our minds that we had to have it. Anyone who has lived in an apartment for 2 years with three children would understand our desperation. We had to have this house.
Yeah.
There were quite a few people at the open house, so Stephen decided it was probably best to fill out the application right there on the spot.
Like ASAP.
Yeah. While doing so, the rather eccentric landlady asked him, "You understand the responsibility that comes with living in an old house such as this?"
Yeah, pipes can be weird.
Right? He was slightly confused, but assumed she meant maintenance or repairs, because, you know, older houses.
Yeah.
And he assured her that, yeah, he did understand that. Mm-hmm. She seemed happy with his answer and let him know that she'd be in touch. A week later, the landlady called Stephen to let him know that she'd decided to rent him the home, and they scheduled a time to meet at a local restaurant to get everything all squared away. Again, Stephen thought it was a little weird, but also pointed out that, quote-unquote, the way she showed the house wasn't in a real estate-type manner. She showed the house as if she were showing a museum.
Okay.
So he was like, she's a little odd, so maybe this is just one of her weird little
favorite houses.
Weird little quirks that she has. Just, you know, whatever. Okay. Once papers had been signed and money had changed hands, the LaChances started moving into the house. And I didn't pick the story because of this. It was literally a bonkers coincidence. They started moving in over Memorial Day weekend.
Perfect.
Like, legit. Like, I know I do that, but this time I didn't. Like,
not on purpose.
I picked it. And then I was doing my research. I'm like, oh.
Perfect.
Well, that worked out. So they started moving in, and when Stephen and the kids were taking the last boxes out of the moving truck, a car slowed down to a near stop in front of the house. The window rolled down, and the passenger shouted to them, "Hope you get along okay here," and drove away.
That's...
cool, bro.
Foreboding.
Yeah.
And not at all uncomfortable.
No.
And what the fucky.
Yeah. Strange, to be sure, but Stephen just assumed that they were being neighborly in their own way.
Mm.
The next morning, Stephen noticed that the bedroom doors all had those old hook and eyelatch style locks on them. Uh-huh. Like, you know, just a little tiny hook and a little tiny thing. You boop. Uh-huh. Only they were on the outside, not the inside, like you'd expect a lock to be. They were all on the outside of the doors.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was a little questionable. He shrugged it off. It was an old house owned by an eccentric old lady, after all. Uh-huh. And so he just continued unpacking. He hung a large framed photo of two angels in the living room, which was something that his daughter apparently suggested, since it matched the cherubs along the ceiling.
Okay.
But as he walked away, it fell to the floor.
Uh-oh.
Which, no big deal, right? Maybe it hadn't been as secure as he'd thought. So he went back, put it in its new spot on the wall, but as soon as he turned his back towards it, it came crashing down again.
Huh.
He hung it up a third time, telling the photo itself...
Stay put.
Yeah, stay there, damn it. And he kind of just laughed because he's like, what the fuck am I talking to? There's nobody here. Okay. But again, it fell off the wall and ended up hitting him in the ankles as he walked away.
Uh-oh.
Just fell right off the wall. And before he could deal with the painting that didn't seem to want to be hung there, his daughter called to him from the front porch. So he went out to see what she wanted, and she pointed to an older man walking on the sidewalk near their house. And she was like, watch this.
Y'all gonna die in there?
Thankfully, no. Because instead of continuing on in a straight line like you'd think any normal person would, the man crossed the street and kept walking before he got to their house. Like, he was close to the house, and as soon as he got maybe too close, crossed the street and continued on his way. So it was a little weird. But Stephen figured that the guy just didn't want to get into a conversation with new neighbors.
Sure.
Which... sure. Like, I would go out of my way to avoid that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to. Maybe he was like me. Maybe. Or maybe he was trying to avoid the house itself.
Probably more likely.
Uh-huh. And that wasn't the only person they saw do that. That was just the first time they saw it. It happened frequently.
Which is why I'm assuming she's like, hey, watch this. This is weird.
Yeah. Yeah,
she must have seen someone else do it.
Mm-hmm. And so finally she's like, okay, well, I've noticed this a couple times. Mm-hmm. Now I have to get my dad to see this because something is weird mm-hmm. here. And he's like, no big deal, I guess. Buddy.
Sure.
Incorrect. Just a couple of days into life at their new home, shit started to get even weirder, mm-hmm. as it always does.
Yeah, yeah.
The family would report feeling strange electrical currents running through the house. And according to an article in Fright Find about the case, and this is a quote, they would describe an electrical current feeling that would pass across the back of their neck or sensations of an inside tickling that would manifest.
I don't like
I'm gonna pass
inside
on that.
Tickling.
I'm not. Yeah.
Not in this context.
No, thanks. Yeah.
Gross. But there.
I am never letting you forget that you have basically admitted that you call sex inside tickling.
Well, I don't, but I might now. I might. No, I hate it. I really hate it.
Come. Hey, baby, come tickle my insides.
No, inside tickling contender for episode title number one. I hate it, but it was pretty good.
Great episode title.
I mean, hey.
So that wasn't the worst of it, though. Like, weird electrical sensations for no good reason.
Right.
Because at night, it looked like somebody was standing outside and shining incredibly bright lights directly into their house. But when they'd go outside to see who the fuck was doing it, no one was there. No evidence of anybody holding any kind of flashlight or anything. Nothing. Just randomly a bright light would shine into the house.
Goo.
Yeah. Hate it. Yeah, hate it.
Hell yeah.
No, thank you.
It's terrible.
It's awful.
Terrible.
And those weren't the only problems with the lights that the family would have either. And all of this stuff happens throughout everything, mm-hmm. by the way, so... There's no real order to this. I'm just telling you stuff.
Got it.
Escalating.
Yep.
So this is the beginning. I hate it. Like, don't do that to me. Please let me be peaceful in my own home. Don't blind me. My rods and cones, guys.
Right?
Can you fucking not?
Rude.
But in a piece written by Stephen in 2004 for Legends of America, he writes that each day we would leave the house and return each evening to find every light in the house turned on. I blamed the children for leaving the lights on in the morning. However, on Friday, my daughter and I sent the boys to the car while we toured the house, making sure that every light was off. That night, we returned home again to find every light burning. When I walked into the house, I was a little shaken, there being no logical reason for all of the lights being on, other than there was someone in our house. Mm-hmm. Searching the house in a panic, I found nothing.
Ew.
So Stephen had a contractor come out and take a look, but they didn't find anything that would cause what the family described, and all of the electrical work in the house looked to be in perfect working order. Because sometimes you're like, okay, well, the light keeps turning on. Maybe there's like a fuse, especially in an older house. Maybe something is weird.
Sure.
Like maybe the wiring is fucky. Mm-hmm. But somebody checked it out and was like, no, it's all good.
Mm, yeah. Not fucky at all.
Your lights are just Nary turning on.
Mm, no.
For no. What can I can only assume as no good reason at all.
Right.
Hooray. So that's fun. And yeah, obviously, first, blame the children, because...
Yes.
Because children are awful gremlins.
No, because it happens. Like, with the little kids turning lights on and forgetting all the time. It's a thing.
Gremlin. Yeah. My daughter's 24 and does the same thing.
Right? So it would make sense to be like, oh, yeah, it was... The kids just left it on, forgot. Mm-hmm. Except... Nope.
Except nope.
Except nope. It's not what happened. On the first Sunday in the house, Stephen and the kids were outside, like, mowing the lawn, getting ready to tackle some yard work. And, I mean, I get it, because after living in an apartment, having a yard to tend to mm-hmm. probably be real fucking exciting.
Oh, yeah.
The daughter, he said, was, like, making plans for, like, garden stuff, like, what vegetables she wanted to plant, what flowers she wanted to plant. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, they were just super stoked, which is fair. Also adorable, and I love it. So... Stephen asked his youngest son to head into the basement to get the hose for a couple of chores that he wanted to get done. Not too long after the little boy went into the house, Stephen heard him screaming.
Ooh, screaming's bad.
Naturally freaked out that his kid was shrieking, he ran inside to find the little boy standing terrified in the kitchen, and he had also wet himself.
Oh, that's bad.
That's not great. When Stephen asked him what was wrong, he said, "Something chased me up the basement steps."
Oh.
Yeah. Stephen asked what had chased him up the steps, to which the boy replied, "I don't know, Daddy, but it was big."
Oh, God.
He did the dad duty and went to check the basement with the older two kids, but they didn't find anything, leading Stephen to assume that his youngest had just let his imagination run away with him. You know,
yeah.
A basement.
Oh, yeah, running up the steps.
Like a fruit cellar basement, especially. Just, you know, it's scary. It's dark down there, especially when you're little. Mm-hmm. And you've never been in a scary basement like that by yourself before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, easy to assume that he's like, oh, he just scared himself.
Right.
However, that assumption wouldn't last long because, as it always does, the activity picked up with a quickness. Now, according to the accounts from the family, the activity would kind of back off for a bit, but it always came back. In addition to the lights always turning themselves on, which, again, continued throughout the family's stay in the home, other things in the house started joining in on the fun.
Oh.
Doors would open and shut by themselves. Sometimes they'd jiggle as if someone was trying to open it from the other side. Well, like the other side of the door, not the other side, but also both.
Yeah. It's probably where those little latches were on the doors.
Maybe.
So they wouldn't open and close on their own all the time.
Uh-huh. On one occasion, Stephen was on the phone with his mom and the doors kept rattling. Thinking it was the kids messing around, he told them to knock it off. To which his daughter responded, "Daddy, I'm in here reading and my brothers are asleep." Fucking tight.
Great.
Tight.
Great.
But put a pin in that event.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm coming back to it in a little bit.
Okay.
So random items around the house, particularly in the kids' bedrooms, would move around on their own. It eventually got to the point that the kids were so scared that they'd all end up sleeping on the floor in Steven's room and he would have to escort them through the halls because they were terrified of something happening.
Mm-hmm.
There were also random and inexplicable temperature fluctuations.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion, Stephen's daughter mentioned how cold it was in the house. Meanwhile, he was boiling hot, like sweating. And as you do, Stephen tried to explain all of these occurrences away until he couldn't. Mm-hmm. In fact, he'd later say that initially, quote unquote, "I was a true skeptic, a true disbeliever. Now I do believe. I wish I didn't. It would be easier for me to sleep at night."
Oof.
Yeah. So one week while they were there, Stephen was prepping for an out-of-town business trip that was happening the next morning. This is a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So he and the kids were just having a pretty chill Sunday night at home, talking about like his trip and the kids' upcoming visit to their grandma's house. And that's when he saw it.
Oh.
In his own words, he said, and this is from that article I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. I noticed it first out of the corner of my eye. A quick glance, something moving, standing at the kitchen doorway that led into the family room. Not something, someone. Mm. I looked toward it again. It was a dark figure of a man, even though there was full light. He was solid in form, except there was a moving, churning, dark gray black smoke or mist that made up his form. I looked down because I was sure I wasn't seeing this and that my eyes were playing tricks on me. One or two good rationalizations and we could go on with our lives without incident. A few moments passed and I was sure that when I looked up again that it would be gone. But he was still there. And he began to move.
Uh-oh.
Moving into the family room and pausing in the center of the room, his form was still a mass of churning, turning blackness. He stood there for what seemed like an eternity, but in actuality it was only a few moments. And then he melted into the air. Gone.
No, thank you. Hard pass.
The hardest of passes.
Yes.
He decided that now would be a great time to leave the house, calmly as to not scare the kids, and quite possibly never return.
Right.
He rallied the kids, saying, let's go get a soda and see Grandma. Which, you know, on a school night, you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the older two apparently took a little bit more convincing, because they're like, something is weird. What is happening?
Right.
What? Night treats. Dad. What's going on?
Right.
But eventually, as they were children, they're like, you know what? Fine. Whatever.
Cool.
Let's go to Grandma's and get some soda. Great. As they were making their way towards the front door, the screaming began.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was in the title, so I assumed it had to show up at some point.
It had to come around eventually, and now we're here.
The screaming started.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah. It was the voice of a man. Screaming in agony so loudly that the neighborhood dogs started to bark at it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stephen snatched his car keys and ordered the kids to get in the car, which they did as fast as they could. Mm-hmm. As they drove away from the house, the youngest son piped up to say, Daddy, the basement monster is standing in the upstairs window.
Oh.
Uh-huh. No thank you. Stephen turned his eyes back towards the house, and much to his horror, the smoky figure he'd seen was standing in the window watching them leave.
Oh, boy.
I don't like it.
No.
I don't like that.
No.
During his week-long business trip, Stephen rationalized everything away and decided that they'd stay in the house after all. So, you know, moving is expensive as hell, especially as a single parent, so I get that. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, it's okay. We'll be fine.
Right. Will you?
Yeah, and he hopes. Once he was back in Missouri... he picked up the kids and took them back to the home on North Christina Street. Over the weekend, they dug around in the shed and found a number of random items that seemed to have been left by previous tenants.
Huh.
Weird. Even though he decided to stay, he thought he should give the landlady a call and see if she may have any information on previous reports of paranormal activity. And also answer about the weird belongings in the shed.
Right.
She was a little cagey in her responses, but eventually shared that one tenant had dipped in the middle of the night and refused to come back for his stuff, while another tenant claimed that the ghost of her father was haunting her while she lived in the house. The landlady also admitted that no previous tenant had stayed in the house for more than a year.
Oh.
Which, again, fucking tight.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool information that I feel like should have been brought to my attention yesterday. So now, remember that event I told you to put a pin in?
Yep.
Here we are. So he scolds his kids for screwing with the doors, and his daughter tells him that they weren't doing anything. Stephen says that he immediately felt the temperature drop in the house drastically, an estimated 30 degrees, to be precise.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Right after that, he felt the weird electric current sensation running through his body, followed immediately by a horrific stench in the room, just out of nowhere.
Oof, we don't like stenches.
No. And then the screaming man started up again.
Oh, boy.
This time, though, it started out softly and gradually got louder and louder. Keep in mind, Steven's still on the phone with his mom while this is happening.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's not great. He yells at her to come over and help him. And that's when he says, the house began to shake and come alive.
The fucking fuck.
Yeah. As he ran to get the kids, he heard someone or something thundering down the stairs, but he was too terrified to look and see what, if anything, was actually there. Like, it sounded like someone was, like, someone huge is barreling down the stairs just repeatedly.
Oof.
Which, again, hard fucking pass.
Yeah,
like, that's
sound.
One of my biggest fears. Is like hearing someone run up on me when I there is absolutely nothing there. I don't like that.
I don't enjoy that at
all. So I would really fucking hate this. And by this time, the screaming was almost deafening. But there wasn't just one voice this time. No, no. This time the screaming man was joined by the screaming of a child.
Oh, no.
Yeah. In a letter to the Moth Boys podcast, Stephen's daughter corroborated this, but remembered it as the voice of a woman. Either way, no fucking thanks. That is too many screams being scrammed. That is too fucking many screams
scrammed
in my general vicinity, and I don't want it.
Don't want any of it. Not here for it.
I'd
like to be excluded from that narrative.
Please. The very loud narrative happening at me.
Yeah, no thanks.
So while all the screaming, shaking, and thundering was going on, Stephen finally made his way up to his room where the kids were. Only problem was he couldn't get the door open.
Mm-mm.
So, again, all the doors locked from the outside.
Right.
And you'd think that he would have easily unlocked the door if that were the problem, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he threw himself against the door a few times, and after screaming, "God help me," he says, is when it finally opened.
Oh, boy.
And he ended up, he said that he was, like, pretty bruised on the side that he was using to, like...
Get his kids.
Get the door open. The whole time that this was going on, he felt the dark presence of whatever inhabited the house not far behind him. Just kind of, like...
Just chilling.
Just behind him, lurking.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, I hate it. They ran out to the car, pulled out of the driveway, and drove down the street a little bit, like, still in view of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And while they were waiting for Stephen's parents to come meet them, he looked back at the house and could see the black figure through the windows, saying that we could see it, searching through the house, searching for us, its blackness moving from room to room methodically.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
I really hate it.
Wow.
I really hate it.
Wow.
The LaChance family never spent another night in the house, and when Stephen met up with the landlady to return the keys, she told him, "Some people are meant to live in an old house like that, and some people aren't. I never thought you were the old house type."
Look here, bitch. Look here, ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am, fuck your house, first of all.
Yeah.
It's the house's fault. Ain't got shit all to do with me.
Sure does not.
And good luck finding anyone to live in that nightmare. Yeah. Ma'am.
Yeah.
Ma'am.
They lived in that house for a grand total of 13 days.
Oh, so this all took place in, like, just under 2 solid weeks.
Yeah. And mind you, he was gone for 5 days on a business trip.
What the fucking fuck?
Yeah.
Wow, so I guess the house just really didn't like them.
Well.
Because if other people's, you said no one stayed more than a year, right?
No one stayed more than a year. But also different tolerances to things. So that's.
That is
but
true,
also.
But fuck that.
There is more that I will talk about in just a second. So, following the incidents at the house, Stephen reached out to several local paranormal investigators and the Roman Catholic Church to look into the house.
Yeah.
According to a WordPress page dedicated to this case, and this is from directly from their website, "A word of caution. It is important to keep in mind the Roman Catholic Church has deemed the Union, Missouri haunting a classic case of demonic infestation, oppression, obsession, and possession in a 156-page document."
Oh, fuck.
Famed investigator and psychic Lorraine Warren was the first to classify this haunting as demonic. John Zaffis, the haunted collector, also classified the haunting along the lines of being the demonic. The list goes on and on. Please do not take the chance with your well-being and the well-being of your family and try to search out the location of this home. It can and has been dangerous for some people who have been exposed to it. This haunting at times can ruin lives and also at times is believed to have been deadly. This is not a location to be taken lightly.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The site also has a page dedicated to some EVPs that were said to be captured at the house later on, including one that seems to be answering a question about Stephen's youngest son. And it says, "I like the little boy."
I don't want you to.
I listened to it, and it's not like a Class A EVP.
Right.
So I needed to get my, I still need to go back and get my headphones, but you can definitely hear something.
Right.
Without it. And there is the webpage. I will obviously give it to you because I used it as a resource. Mm-hmm. And on that page, there is a little thing at the top that'll take you to the webpage where all of the EVPs are.
Oh.
There are several. There are several. But that one was what among the most that I hated the most.
Fair.
I was like, no, fair. I don't like that.
Fair.
And there has been a ton of speculation as to why this house in particular was haunted. But it seems like it's one of those places where it's not necessarily the house itself, but the land it was built on.
Yeah, it makes more sense.
And here's why. During the Civil War,
yeah,
already.
Makes sense.
Already. The land itself was owned by Captain John T. Crow, and the house was allegedly built where the slave quarters used to be. And according to local legend, Captain Crow had all of the male slaves on the property murdered after finding out that his lovely young wife Minerva was having an affair or two.
Uh-oh.
Which may have also contributed to her untimely demise at just 29 years old.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of other historical information on that same website that has, like, a gigantic rundown of the history of the area.
Uh-huh.
And these that I'm covering now are just bullet points. But if you want to do, like, a deeper dive, that website would be a good place to start.
Okay. Minerva Crow. What
Minerva
a great
Crow,
name.
Right? I can't remember. I think her middle name was Eve.
Even better.
And she was beautiful. And she was just a few months away from her 30th birthday.
Like, I'm looking.
It was under 6 months, I want to say, because
right.
on Find a Grave, I found her. And I couldn't find an actual cause of death listed.
Oh, interesting.
I also did not look super hard. But Find a Grave didn't have any information. Just, this is when she was born, this is when she died.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she was gorgeous.
Huh, okay.
But that's not all in that area.
Mm-hmm.
That's not all of the fuckery that happened there. Because near the site of the house, there's a nursing home now, which is said to have once been a hospital during the Civil War.
Right.
That was later used as the county poorhouse, which, as we all know,
yeah,
whole lot of mass graves at a county poorhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was no different. There is a mass grave not far from where the house sits now. But the horrors wouldn't stop there, because in 1974, someone died by suicide in a house across the street. And in another neighboring house, it was just one street over to be exact, that same year, 1974, a woman killed her husband with an axe and then shot herself.
Good God.
So, the ground is sour.
Ground is sour.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Sour.
And that's just a few instances of shit happening on that land or around it, like in the direct vicinity of
it. It's you don't want to go down that road.
You don't.
Sour.
Sour. Ground is sour.
Yeah. So that's just a few examples.
Wow.
Because that's not it. Then obviously the Civil War.
But,
like, I could have left it there.
Yeah. Nuff said.
Nuff said. Stephen himself would go on to found a paranormal team in 2004, but it doesn't seem to be active any longer. In 2007, he wrote a book about his time at the Screaming House called The Uninvited, The True Story of the Union Screaming House, and would go on to do the paranormal circuit, including appearances on Coast to Coast with Art Bell, and a third season episode of A Haunting. According to his daughter, while the house was indeed haunted, some events were embellished over time. For, you know, whatever purposes that happen, whether you've got a publisher breathing down your neck telling you to add a little flair or whatever.
A little zhuzh.
It's happened. Like, one of the things that was a later claim was that the youngest son had seen a figure in the house that looked like a clown.
Oh.
Nah. Like, I don't like it. No, I thank you. It had no eyes is the problem. Yeah. Is the true. Problem.
And that it's a clown.
Eyeless, toothy.
Clown thing.
Clown thing. Yeah, which, no thank you.
Thank you, no thank you.
But that was added to a later iteration of the story, so if it happened or not, I don't know.
Right. Thank you, no thank you.
At the end of the day, the jury's out on whether the house is actually haunted, as certain residents would want us to think. But like I always say, sometimes it's not the house itself that's haunted, but the people inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the motherfucking story of the Union Screaming House.
Wow.
It's too many screams being screamed.
Yeah.
It's too many screams.
That's a lot.
It's a fucking lot.
And so it's a undisclosed address, huh?
There is an address listed. It is on North Christina Street, but some people aren't sure if that's the house for sure.
Okay.
But if you live in Union, Missouri,
you
may know it. But some people are like, I've never heard this story before in my life. I live there and I've never heard it before. And other people are like, oh, it's bullshit. This resident, right. Blah, blah, blah. But it's like, there was one article I read where the lady's like, the list, he said it was a 3-bedroom house, but the listing up on Zillow now, it says it's a 1-bedroom. I'm like, well, that's what, when the listing's not active, it takes all that information away usually. So that's, that could be one of the reasons why he said.
Sure.
Because it's really 1-bedroom house. That's not really.
Those are rare.
Exactly. It's not a tiny home. So I'm like, that can't be a reason why you don't believe this story.
That's a weird.
Yeah.
Weird thing to be hung up on.
Exactly. It's a corner lot and the address is out there, but I don't know if it's like the actual one. I just know that North Christina Street was standard throughout everything. So.
Ground
is out. Yeah. It's on the corner and it's white. Still.
There you go.
My source is imdb.com. Mm. Ranker.com, Patrick Thornton. Medium.com, Kathy Coombs. Findagrave.com, FrightFind.com, Coast to Coast AM. Legendsofamerica.com, Stephen LaChance. ParanormalTaskForce.com, that I believe is where the EVPs are.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also find them at thescreaminghouse.wordpress.com.
Got it.
And then the Moth Boys podcast, episode 39, The Union Screaming House, and season 3, episode 7, Return to the Union Screaming House, The Real Story.
Wow.
And that was the episode where they read the letter from Stephen LaChance's daughter.
Okay.
Yeah. And she, again, does not give her name. So they gave her one. Yeah. They called her Lydia.
Sure.
But, yeah. They've also been, like I said, they've been on a few paranormal shows. They were on... a haunting, I believe it was a haunting was the one that they were on, all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you want to hear that story in full from the daughter's side, go listen to that episode of Moth Boys podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. I'm like,
13 days.
That's a
shit fell apart. 13 days.
And they weren't even there for all 13.
He was gone for 5.
Unless there's, because the timeline is weird, so they could have been there for 13 days total, and then not counting the 5 days they were gone. I don't know.
Could just be kind of a fucky timeline.
Yeah, as happens in haunted house stories sometimes.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, a little hard to keep track of something as silly as time when there's a fucking smoke monster guy in your house.
Right?
No, thank you.
And he screams.
And he fucking screams!
So
of all things,
no,
I don't.
It's bad enough when they're silent.
Yeah.
But, you know, you add shrieking.
No.
That's 10 out of 10. Don't recommend.
And he's not the only one shrieking in my house.
No.
He was also joined by a woman and or child.
No.
No.
No. No, not at all. So, well, I have a story, too.
Oh, do you?
I do. And let me put on my iBarts. It's a 2-parter.
Ooh.
It is going to be a 2-parter. I'm just going to let y'all know that because I am leaving town on Thursday, and this was just the easier way to do it. And
it happens.
It just worked out that way because the story is very long. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm going to split this in two and just make it easier on myself. So
there you go.
My story today is a listener request.
Ooh.
Not just any listener, but it came from my boy child. He wanted me to do this story. So Julian, this one's for you. And I'm going to be telling y'all about the mysterious death of Tiffany Valiente.
Hmm.
And this case was covered on a 2022 episode of Unsolved Mysteries titled Mystery at Mile Marker 45.
Yeah.
Tiffany died on July 12th, 2015, just 4 weeks after her high school graduation, after being hit by New Jersey Transit Train 4693 near her home in Mays Landing, New Jersey. Her partially clothed, barefoot mangled body was found on a dark stretch of the Atlantic City rail line, approximately 4 miles from her house, and her death was ruled a suicide. But if it were that cut and dry, her story would not be on Unsolved Mysteries, and I wouldn't be discussing it on this podcast.
Facts.
So let's get into it. So 18-year-old Tiffany Valiente lived with her parents, Stephen and Diane, in Mays Landing, which is about 20 miles west of Atlantic City. She was a star athlete at Oak Crest High School, graduating with varsity letters in multiple sports, and had gotten a full-ride scholarship to New York's Mercy College, where she was going to play volleyball and be a middle starter, which, as a freshman, was pretty uncommon. She was real sporty, real good.
Okay.
Tiffany dreamed of playing volleyball in the Olympics, and she had planned to major in criminal justice, then go into either the Air Force or law enforcement. Tiffany's mom, Diane, described her as always beautiful, bright, and energetic. Friends described her smart, friendly, hardworking. But in the days, weeks, and months leading up to her death, she had been having some personal struggles. Her grandfather had died, and she took it pretty hard. She started acting out a bit. She was smoking the weed and skipping class. She and her mother, Diane, had clashed to the point that Child Protective Services visited their home 3 times in 2014. And it was, you know, they were fighting and arguing. And Diane admittedly, a teacher had seen a bruise on Tiffany's arm and, you know, mandatory reporter. Mm-hmm. And Diane's like, yeah, no, I hit her in the arm. We were fighting. And so they both agreed to go to counseling, during which Tiffany told their therapist that she was neither depressed nor suicidal. And the therapist ultimately decided that she had a stable family relationship. It's just normal teenage daughter, mother stuff. So in early 2015, Tiffany came out as gay and started dating women, but she had also expressed some feelings of loneliness to her friends, who later told investigators that she had self-harmed. So now let's get to the evening of July 12th and what is known to have happened in the hours leading up to her death. So July 12th was a Sunday, and Tiffany and her parents went to her cousin's graduation party, which was being held literally right across the street from their home. They lived right there. Okay. They had been there for several hours. Tiffany hung out with relatives by the pool, took pictures, played volleyball, and made plans for decorating her new college dorm. According to her father, Stephen, she was having a great time, and later that evening she had invited some friends to come to the party, and then they were all going to, you know, go hang out.
As you do.
Yeah.
High school graduation.
Yep. So at 9:15, Tiffany left, headed back home across the street to shower and change, when right around that same time, Diane got a call from one of Tiffany's friends. The girl said that she was about to pull up to their house and had asked Diane to come over so that they could talk.
Ooh.
Diane said, yeah, okay, and she told, you know, Stephen what was going on, that she needed to head across the street, and so he decided to go with her, and they went over there, and her friend and her mother were pulling up, and the friend started screaming and yelling, accusing Tiffany of stealing her debit card and buying around $300 worth of clothes and food. Stephen and Diane immediately called Tiffany and asked her to come outside. And Diane at first defended her daughter, saying that she had no reason to steal the girl's card because she would have just asked them if she needed anything.
Yeah.
And when Tiffany came outside, she denied stealing the girl's card. At 9:24, about 10 minutes after they had gotten there, the friend and her mom left, and Stephen went back inside the house, but Diane decided to search Tiffany's car. While doing so, she noticed Tiffany putting a debit card into her back pocket, and she confronted her. And Tiffany told her that she had taken the card, yes, and she spent about $86, which prompted a pretty heated argument with Diane telling her daughter, you know better than that. We didn't raise you that way. And so she went inside to go get Stephen to be like, okay, we need to talk to her, right? This, however, was not the first time that Tiffany had been caught stealing A few months earlier, she had taken money from her parents' bank account. So Diane went into the house to get Stephen. When they went back outside, 9:28 p.m., Tiffany was gone. Barely a minute had gone by since Diane had gone into the house, so they immediately went to look for her, thinking she was probably just, you know, they'll see her walking up the street. So Stephen walked up and down their road several times, though, and asked anyone if they had seen Tiffany. No mm-hmm. one had. So Diane started, she called Tiffany's friend and told her that Tiffany had, you know, taken off, maybe run yeah. away after the fight. So the friend and then two more friends came back to help look for Tiffany. At first, they thought that maybe she was just, you know, embarrassed or mad, and that maybe she was just, you know, hiding in the woods or watching them search for her. But it soon became clear that that was not the case. So a large group of family and friends split up into search parties, searching for her by foot and car. Mm-hmm. Diane believes that if Tiffany had walked down the road, someone would have seen her. Yeah. They were all neighbors. It's a straight shot. Her relatives live across the street. Tiffany's 6'2". She's a tall girl.
Okay.
Difficult to miss.
Yeah.
And Diane also said that there's absolutely no way that she would have gone into the woods after dark. So over the next several hours, Tiffany's friends and family texted her, called her, trying to find out where she was, asking her to come home. Stephen's brother, Michael, went to his and Stephen's mother's house, thinking that maybe Tiffany had gone to her grandma's house, because it was also in walking distance. It was about a half mile away. But she was not there either. So Michael and the others started driving around to different places around town. No sign of Tiffany. Stephen left her a voicemail saying, "Tiff, please just come home. I love you to death. You mean everything in the world to me. Please just come home." But she never answered or responded, because it turns out that Tiffany didn't have her phone.
Oh, fuck.
Stephen found it on the ground around 11 p.m. while walking up the road next to their house. It was about 5 feet from the side of the road. Now, Stephen said that he had already looked in that area. The phone wasn't there. He also said that she would never have left her phone there or anywhere for that matter, because Tiffany, like many teens, always had her phone in her hand 24/7. She even had a waterproof cover put on it so she could take it into the shower with her.
Oh.
So when the phone was found, Diane knew that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Stephen, at that moment, he had a aha. Oh, yeah. Guess what? I got a deer camera at the end of the driveway. So he checked it and found that it had photographed Tiffany walking down the driveway at 9:28 p.m. And then 1 minute later at 9:29, it took a photo of Stephen and Diane when they had gone to look for her. So literally a 1 minute had passed. And it took... Oh, there we go. Lost my spot. So they then called the police to report Tiffany missing. Like, where? How? A minute.
Yeah.
They were 1 minute behind her in a photograph. Why the fuck didn't they see her?
Yeah, that makes me uncomfy.
Right. So, according to Diane, the night she went missing, she was wearing a black shirt, white jean shorts, flats. Her hair was up in a messy bun with a white headband. And according to the photo, based on how her head was turned, Diane believes that she was looking at something or perhaps responding to someone calling her name. And the deer camera photo was the last confirmed sighting of her.
Oh, I hate that so much.
So at around midnight, a couple hours after Tiffany was last seen, her uncle Michael decided to drive down South Pomona Road, which is not far from her house. When he got to the railroad tracks, he noticed several police cars parked on the transit access road. Thinking it may be connected to his niece's disappearance, he asked, you know, what was up, and a Galloway Township police officer told him that someone, possibly a female, had been hit by a train, but that he didn't have any more information because it happened in the jurisdiction of New Jersey Transit Police. So Michael approached one of the transit officers and asked if he had seen anyone matching Tiffany's mm-hmm. description. The officer said that he hadn't, but that the person that had been struck by the train matches that description.
Oh.
So at that point, Michael was very much hoping that it wasn't his niece on the tracks, but the police were pretty confident that it was. Hmm. So the officer asked Michael if he would identify the body. And he would later say that as horrible as it was, he was glad that he was the one to identify Tiffany because he knew his brother Stephen would not have been able to handle it.
Yeah.
Saying that the state her body was in was one of the most horrific things he had ever seen. She was barefoot, wearing just her underwear and sports bra. And the train had hit Tiffany with such force that all of her limbs had been torn off.
Holy shit.
So after identifying his niece, Michael went with the police to Stephen and Diane's house to tell them what had happened. And Diane would later say, "When they first came to the house to tell us, I made them repeat themselves because I was just in shock. They just said she was hit by a train. They didn't tell us anything else. We thought she was in a car with someone and that the car got hit. That's what we initially thought. We were like, oh God, who else was in the car?" But by the next day, investigators had officially closed the case, saying that Tiffany had thrown herself in front of the train and had died by suicide. But the family was not at all convinced. According to Diane, Tiffany was happy and she wasn't depressed or suicidal. She said she was excited for college in the fall and was making plans with her roommate. In fact, Diane said her daughter had lots of plans. She was planning a trip to Six Flags with friends. She was making plans to play softball that Wednesday. She was going to Great Adventure Park the very next morning with friends. Mm-hmm. And Tiffany's cousin, Robert Jr., said that she showed no signs of stress or being upset when he talked to her at the party that night. According to him, she was telling him all about her new school clothes and was excited for the next chapter in her life. So the morning after Tiffany's death, Robert Sr., Robert Jr.'s dad, and mm-hmm. Robert Jr., went to the Trex where she had died to see if they could find any clues or literally just anything for that matter. They also did not want Diane and Stephen to go with them, which was best because there Fair. Were pieces of Tiffany left behind.
Oh.
As they searched the area to see if they could find anything of hers that was missing, like her shoes, mm-hmm. her headband, earrings, jewelry, and her shorts, Robert Sr. ended up picking up various pieces of bone.
Oh.
He, however, also did find one of Tiffany's bracelets that she had been wearing, and he brought it back home to Diane. He said that picking up her remains was the most devastating thing he'd ever done. While walking along the tracks, Robert Jr. found bloody rubber gloves just laying on the ground, and he says the New Jersey Transit Police were not trained for that type of scene, and they did not do a good job of cleaning up the tracks.
Woof.
They searched for several hours, but they never found Tiffany's shoes, headband, or clothing. So, within 24 hours of Tiffany's death, the New Jersey Transit Police and the local medical examiner's office determined that she had committed suicide, and her family at first accepted the suicide ruling and had their daughter cremated. But then some things started to not add up. And Diane would later say of Tiffany's cremation, "Worst decision of my life. I just assumed the investigators did what they were supposed to do."
Fuck.
But maybe they hadn't. Because 3 weeks after her daughter's death, Diane was walking down Tilton Road, which intersects with the tracks, when she saw Tiffany's shoes underneath a tree next to the road. Now, according to her, they had already searched that area before, but had never found anything. She also noticed that Tiffany's headband was on the ground about 6 feet away. And this was 1 mile from their home and 2 miles from the tracks where Tiffany had been hit. Now, this was odd on its own, but coupled with the fact that on July 16th, 4 days after her death, the Atlantic County Sheriff's Office sent a canine handler with a bloodhound to see if they could pick up Tiffany's scent from her house to the tracks, which it did. And the bloodhound led the handler directly from Tiffany's driveway along 3.2-mile route that ended in the general area of where she had been hit by the train. However, that was nowhere near where Diane had just found her daughter's things. And then there was the autopsy report that said nothing about her feet being dirty or cut up after potentially walking 2 miles barefoot through the woods, dirt, train tracks, which is suspect and highly fucking questionable.
Yeah.
So Diane immediately called Stephen, who called the police. They came out, took some photos, put the shoes and headband in a brown bag, and that was that. So after not hearing anything back from the police regarding what she had found, Diane and Stephen decided to talk to an attorney. So they contacted Paul D'Amato, And after hearing their story, he decided he's going to get the records from the New Jersey Transit Police Department. So he filed suit to subpoena the records, which he totally expected would confirm that Tiffany had committed suicide and he would be able to help the obviously grieving parents get some closure mm-hmm. and accept,
yeah.
you know, what the police had said happened. But after reading the report and seeing the photos of the body, it seemed to him that something wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
For starters, Tiffany's feet were clean. Pristinely clean. No cuts, no abrasions, no dirt, nothing. Then as he started digging deeper into the case, some other weird shit started to surface. And Paul D'Amato now also believed that Tiffany Valiente did not commit suicide. And that's where we're going to stop today. I'm going to leave y'all with a little bit of a cliffhanger. So, that is part one. Part un.
So, her feet had cuts.
They did not have cuts.
No cuts.
They were pristine.
Did they have butts or coconuts?
They had none of those things. No. So, for someone who was...
I thought maybe butts and coconuts might be there.
Yeah, nope.
Anybody? Nope. Anybody know what I'm doing right now?
No, I don't. I don't know butts and coconuts. Should I know butts and coconuts?
No cuts, no butts, no coconuts.
No, I don't know that.
This is, you'd say that to kids who cut in line in school. No cuts, no butts, no coconuts.
Huh. Maybe it was a California thing.
Children of your generation, because mm-hmm. never in my life.
You and I are very close to the same age.
Far enough away for it to make a difference culturally in some aspects. Like that. Could also be regional, but no.
Sure.
Never in my life have I heard that.
No.
In that context. Or I don't think ever.
This might be categorized as one of the worst things I've ever said.
I'm going to put it up there. I'm going to say right now.
Your face didn't do the face. But...
No, I'm going to say that's maybe like, if we're doing a list out of five, I'm going to put it at number five.
Okay.
All right. Well,
you think I've said four worse things than that?
Absolutely, you have.
Probably.
You think I've said anything better? I don't know what I'm trying
worse
to
better.
I don't know what you're trying to do either.
Doesn't matter.
Worse,
but
better.
Yes.
Better, worse.
Better, worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, no, her feet were clean.
Yeah.
And considering...
just went all the way for a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Her body was found 2 miles away from her shoes. And supposedly, she was walking up a road through some woods onto some tracks.
Yeah.
She had some really clean feet.
For walking through the woods barefoot.
You know, and train tracks, you know, they're dirty, right?
They're tracky.
They're tracky, and sometimes they got that sticky shit all over them. So.
Sap.
Yeah. Nothing. Pristine, clean feet.
All right.
So,
well, shit.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to finish this up next week.
I'm excited.
Leave y'all hanging. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right. Well, fuck. Well, we done it then.
We did it.
Because I'm going to do my sources next week. So, y'all know the drill. Rate, review, subscribe. Share. If you'd like some exclusive motherfucking content, go become a patron on our La Patroon. Is it 5,000 degrees in here or mm-hmm. is it just me?
No,
okay.
It's 5,000 degrees.
That's what I fucking thought.
Yeah. So. I'm going to give way to our friends at...
Are you okay? Are you having a stroke? Boom Studios?
Boom Studios.
Thank you. This week, instead of running my ad.
So, all right. Well, till next time, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Bye. Hats off to the Fuck You Club. Fuck that house.
Seriously.
Fuck that house. That thing that's in that house. That screaming thing. Fuck that thing.
Yeah. Too many screams.
Too many screams.
Too many screams being screamed.
Yep.
In that fucking house.
Yep. Fuck you, Bob.
Fuck you, Bob.
Always.
Fuck you, Ted.
Fuck you, Ted. Oh, super fuck Ted.
Kimberly can't read.
Who's the one we added?
Robert.
Fuck you, Robert.
Kimberly can't read. Fuck you, Gwyneth.
Always.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. And fuck that house. Sideways. 6 ways from Sunday.
Yeah.
Pooping nipples.
What? So gross.
That's number 5 now. Before we let you go, tell us a little bit about this new venture with Boom Studios you've got going on.
I'm really excited. We're doing a Kickstarter. We do premium editions of different books that we have on Kickstarters now. And the newest one that we're doing is Skinwalker Ranch. So very excited. It's going to be based on Hunt for the Skinwalker from, as you already know from Colm Keller and George Knapp. They did this amazing investigation over the many years, and we're taking all of that and we're actually putting it into a graphic novel. Ooh. So we're going to be offering the book with additional information, but also offering a graphic novel form of it, which is going to be the first time that it's been visualized in that format. So we're
super excited.
Yeah, it's going to be just absolutely amazing. We have X-Men writer Zach Thompson, who's going to be writing it. We're going to have David Seaman, who's going to be doing all of the art for it. It's going to be absolutely amazing. We get to share some of the classified documents from Colm and George Knapp that they've never released before. So these files are going to be released for the first time only through us and only through Kickstarter. So big hyped about it. I'm more excited for this campaign than I should be because it marries my two loves of comics and paranormal.
Yeah. Have you ever been out to Skinwalker Ranch yourself? Or
I have not. Have you?
No. Would love to. Let's put that on my bucket list.
There you go.
We'll put that on there.
That's one of those same still scary things, though, of like, I don't want to see a big wolf. I'm not about that life. That is fair.
The thing about Skinwalker Ranch, other than, skinwalkers, it's the...
You mean flesh pedestrians?
Those two. is just the weird energy vortex alien. I don't do that. That alien stuff freaks me out more than anything.
It's a hotbed of paranormal events for sure. It's so weird because it's like my stepmom is a big fan of like UFOs and things, so they had alien farm out here recently, and I guess George I believe it was George that had mentioned it was like, oh yeah, we have a secret project coming up, and I was just like, oh, I think I wonder what it is, and then I was like, oh, it's us.
Oh wait, I know what it is.
Okay. It's so funny because you don't think about, like, when I think of paranormal, I don't really think about UFOs, but like it is a part of it. It is technically a part of that world, and it's just so weird to think about because like it's one thing to make the argument of like ghosts aren't real. There's no way aliens aren't real. They have to be real.
They can't not be.
It's like, you can't be the only thing in this universe, this anything.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. When I think about it in depth too much, I freak myself out. I'm like, well, now I have to stop doing that and do something very dumb because now I scared myself.
Yeah. I can't think about that, like, either. So
thought myself into a horrifying nightmare existential crisis. Now I need to watch Perfect Strangers or literally anything to take my mind off of it.
That and cattle mutilations and things like that.
There's so much happening at that one spot.
And it's too many things.
It's a lot. And
I mean, I'd go.
Exactly.
I'm down, but
like, I want to go to there, but also I do not.
Exactly.
Because many variables.
And that's the exciting thing about this, though, is if you don't want to go there, but you want to see everything, it's going to be a graphic novel form.
Exactly. You can look at it from the safety and comfort of your own home.
Perfect.
Love down here safely away from everything else and just read about it from home.
You can experience it with your own imagination.
Perfect.
And not have to like potentially encounter the horrors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love that.
Skinwalker, not about that life.
No.
Scares me.
No.
It's great. But that I wouldn't love that at all.
Good.
Right. I'd take a ghost any day.
Any day. I'm good with not that. So.
Same.